Accession number 23100, reel 3.
Okay, we're off and running. So you were going to, he hoped to get you into this octune.
Well, he said, I'll put your name in, and it's all right, don't worry. You'll be in the next octune in two weeks' time. I said, I don't want to be an officer, I just want to be a jock. And we argued about this. I said, but you're entitled to a university commission with your background. And we had a bit of an argument, and he said, my God, Fife, you're a consummation student, and you're no better. And I was quick enough to say, Professor, you're my teacher, weren't you? So we both laughed at that, and he said, look, I think you're foolish, but if you want to go and see Mackay, go up, and with my blessing, he said, I'll give you a note of introduction to Mackay. And he said, if there's any difficulty should arise, go to Fort George, which was the Sea Force Depot, that's near Inverness, along Murray Firth. He said, you know the area? I said, I know it very well. Do you know the coast road from Elgin? I said, yes, I know the coast road along the shore. Yes, I said, I know the coast road very well along the shore. Well, he said, take that road, and the fort is up there on the hill, and a mile before you get to the fort, there's a big house on your right. That's General Sir William Thompson. And I said, General Sir William Thompson, Willie Thompson. Well, he said, I call him General. I said, well, if it's a General Sir Willie Thompson I know, he is the brother-in-law of the lady who was my bunk wife in Glasgow for 2.5 years, Mina, Wilhelmina Thompson, and her daughter Beatrice. She had two sons, Colin and Jack, but they're both away from home, but Beatrice was still living in the bunk with me. So I said, I know a lot about Willie Thompson, because her husband had died, and she was full of her brother-in-law, Willie Thompson. So I said, he said, good God, I'll give you an introduction to General Thompson. So I drove up to Elgin to find that the Sea Force had backed up just the day before and had gone to Tain. Tain was 60 miles away, a return journey of 60 miles. My Bentley did 16 miles to the gallon, and I had petrol enough, through this uncle of mine with his hiring feet, to get to Elgin from home and back again, with maybe half a gallon left, but I didn't have petrol to go to Tain, so I had to scrub that. However, I thought, we'll go to Fort George. Stopped off at this house, rang the bell, and a tall man came out, and I handed him Nisbet's letter, and he said, oh yes, yes. I said, excuse me, sir, but I bunked with Mrs. Wilhelmina Thompson for 2.5 years in Cecil Street. I said, you what? I said, yes. I said, I've known about you, sir, for a long time. Oh, we had a chat about Mina Thompson and Beatrice and the boys, whom I didn't know, well, I'd met them once. And he said, right, walk to the fort, go to the orderly room, and see the commanding officer, Colonel Hoch. Look, I'll just write this on my card here, an introduction to Colonel. Hand it into the orderly room, off you go. Good luck. So I went up to the fort, and this damn great Bentley with a huge 12-inch fishtail exhaust, bumbling through as they were drilling in the barrack square, found the orderly room with a note outside, cut off the engine, went in hand to this. I was shown immediately into Lieutenant Colonel Hawke's office, listened to my story. He said, yes, I'll be delighted to have you in the unit, but there's a system in operation, and I'm afraid you must go through the recruiting officer at Inverness. He said, you'll find his office on the Forth Bridge, and he's Major Fraser. My heart sank at that, because I knew this Major Fraser from before the war by reputation, crusty old so-and-so. However, in order to follow the system, I went down and saw this man, who said, I don't give a damn if you know General Thompson and Colonel Hawke. I'm the recruiting officer, and you go through me. That was that. He said, I'll take your details. So he took my details, and the next intake would be likely in the autumn sometime, late in the autumn. And I trundled home. And then we came to July, 21st of July, and a letter came through the post instructed me to report to the 19th War Intelligence Course at King Alfred's College, Winchester, on the 2nd of August. A river warrant wasn't closed, and decent ought to bring, you know, small kits as it were, toothbrush and shaving tackle. And I discussed this at home with my parents, and there was no way. And I said, well, it's time I did something, because I've been stymied for nearly a year.
And this is at a time of, you know, the invasion scare, isn't it? August 1940.
I know. Battle of Britain just round the corner. And I said, look, I think I must have put aside in any case. King Alfred's College, it must be a very cushy billet, thinking of our residential places in St Andrews, which were quite comfortable. And I said, all right, I'll accept this. Whatever warrant and all, and I telegraphed down to say I would report on 2nd of August. It did say notify arrival, so I notified my intention to arrive anyhow. And 4 or 5 days later, or a week later, I got a personal note from Colonel Hawk saying he'd seen my name on the next intake on the 20th of August, I think it was, and he'd be glad to welcome me to the unit. And I had to write a mortifying letter to Colonel Hawk explaining I'd been called for the 19th War Intelligence Course. That's when I went. And I went down to Winchester, and I was walking off from college. I went and reported to what were the playing fields, with huts dotted round about. And I reported there, and they said, right, hut number 5 for you. Report to hut number 5. I went up to hut number 5, and as I say, it's my business. I was a new intake. I was dumped in my arms with a battle dress, boots, the lot, everything else, and told, go to hut number 7, you'll find your space allotted there. Hut number 7, I was an NCO in charge. Who are you? I'm 5. Right, your bed is so and so. That bed wasn't a bed, it was a palliasse, a palliasse lying on the floor, empty of course. He said, right, take your palliasse out, round the back, and fill up with straw. Take the pillow as well, fill up with straw. And I got round the back, and I found that I got the last straw that broke the camel's back. There was very, very little left, and I had to scrape it up off the ground. However, they were a merry bunch, a very merry bunch in our section.
Were they people like yourself?
Yes, from all walks of life. There was a band leader from London. There was a lawyer, there was a schoolmaster called Swanell, and he and I, during our course at Winchester, used to go down at least once a week to the God Begot for dinner, instead of the stuff they served up in the canteen. And there were others as well, a man called Roy MacDonald Stocks from Bristol, and a fellow called Wells. Wells Stocks was a decent fellow. And Wells was a chap we called Stinkin' Woolly, because he tended to poof off every so often. But a nice chap, and we piled up, the 4 of us, Stocks, Wells, and Swanell, and we went through this. This was a guards operated place, and you were, my God, we actually had to polish the studs and the boots. It was real spit and polish, and there were some lousy sergeants. There's one I could have bashed his face with a rifle, but was great pleasure, called Delaney. It was a man from Aberdeen who was the Scots Guards, and he still had his Aberdeen accent. About time! And there was our sergeant, Clark, obviously Nobby Clark. He was Grenadier Guards, very pleasant fellow, very helpful indeed. And we went through the whole gamut there. We were up in the morning early for PT, and then went back, cold water only, and we showered and shaved for breakfast. After that, we went out on playground, and we were drilled. We were very well drilled, very well drilled indeed. And during the course of the first week, we went down for this drill course. No, it wasn't a drill course. There was a sergeant there. I'm Sergeant Norton, in charge of motorcycling. A useful name for a motorcyclist. Stand forward, two paces, all, who can ride a motorcycle? Hop, them. Some step forward. Over there, collect a motorcycle from the NCO there. He'll tell you what to do. Off they went. And within minutes, they were circling the whole field on a motorcycle. Stand forward, all those men who think they ride a motorcycle. Hop, hop, down the two. And I thought, well, hell, I've ridden a bike most of my life. And during my school and university vacations, I spent all my time in my uncle's workshops, motor engineering workshops, and I became practically a full-blooded apprentice. There was no machine I couldn't take down, including motorcycles. And in those days, there were no spares on shelves. If something broke, you had to remake it, either on the lathe or on the forge, with a bow lamp, or on the forge. And so I thought, I'm pretty certain I can stick on a motorcycle, so I'll join this gang. Right, over there, NCO, over there, went across, and there was a chap, I've forgotten his name now, who had a bad foot. His right foot was bad, and fortunately it was right foot. Right, you're thinking ride a motorcycle? Right, get them started. And not many could start them, because some of them were chancers. But I got mine started, I was the first away. Right, on, round the course. Off I went. Tin hat on the head, of course. And then 2 days later, we were actually taken out by Norton himself on the roads. Tin hat's never fitted, so before long you had a fiendish headache. And there we were, belting along the roads and lanes round Winchester at 50 and 60 miles an hour. Chaps who hadn't been on a bike in their lives before. And one of our next, the other section, a young chap who could ride a motorcycle, he lost control and struck a telephone pole and he was hospitalised. But it didn't matter, the rest of us just keep on going. And then we were taken to dunes, moorland dunes, up and down sands and all the rest of it. We were passed out with motorcycles. Then that course, we had one period on the full length range outside Winchester, 300 yards range, and we were sat down, we were lying down there. We had two full clips, 5 rounds each, and 5 rounds in your own time, fire! I fired off my 5 rounds. I had done a bit of shooting before. I knew which end the bullet came out, so I knew which end to put my shoulder in. And 5 rounds, rapid, fire! Bang, 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 bang. I got a kick on my boot. Good shooting, number 5. What's that man's name, Sergeant? Nobby Clark. 5, sir. 5. Oh, I see. Right. I've mentioned this because it's slightly important. And he collected all the targets. We didn't know much about them because we were off immediately to Matlock when we bunked in Smedley's Hydro, which was better insofar we had a wash basin in the bedroom. It was a room, it was really only a single room, but there were 3 beds in it, and Roy McDonald Stocks, Stinkin' Willie and I shared this 3-room small room with 3 beds. But one of the great joys was there was abundant hot water, and we quickly and it went down to the first opportunity into Matlock and bought a large bottle of camp coffee, and we had coffee after our meals from the hot water tap. We had a merry crew, and Swanell joined us there too, and then my wife came down for a few days. I came down to see her aunt in Willie Bridge, Pennant End, and came on to Matlock, where she put up in the local hotel, and we met after duty.
Was the Matlock part getting more onto the intelligence corps side of things, or was it still your basic training?
No, this was the intelligence side, except that instead of PT in the morning, we were out at just o'clock. We were running up and down the Derbyshire Dales, and to hell with anybody who fell by the wayside. It was hard work. But it was much more intensively intelligence, codes, ciphers, and all the rest of it, and detection, disguising yourself, hiding yourself, following, avoiding being followed, that sort of kind of Group B on a much reduced scale. And Skilbeck and Booker are both on the staff, as also is Woolwich. Brooker. And they, of course, ended up at Group B with Woolwich.
So sort of like tradecraft, really, if you like.
That's right. And we had still drill to keep us, more or less up to the mark. But it was a very pleasant course and very enjoyable. And then it came to an end and we were lectured by Brigadier Barker Binfield, who was commandant. We were mustered into this large gymnasium and he called us gentlemen. You have just completed the 19th War Intelligence Corps here at Matlock and you are now entering a period when you will be facing the enemy.
Right.
The time will come when you will be facing the enemy and sadly some of you will die. Remember gentlemen, you've been in the 19th War Intelligence Corps and make sure you die with your boots on. We were supposed to clap at that, which we didn't do. And that was goodbye to Matlock. We went back to Winchester to find the section ahead of us. It was clad in pith helmets and khaki drill shirts and shorts. They were going to the Middle East. And we hung around for fully ten days with nothing happening to us. We were all sort of happy about, Swanell and I visited God We Got much more often. And eventually, on the Friday of the second week, we all had to look at part one and part two orders every morning, of course. I read the order, 768-928-9 Lost Corporal 5, report to the order room at 11:30 that morning. So I duly reported, order room, went in, and the CEO himself was sitting at the desk, not the adjutant, Earl of North Esk. Ah, 5! He was the bloke who kicked my foot and said, good shooting, number 5. He said, you'll be outposted, 5. Read your posting order. I got this green bit of paper. You will train on the noon express from Winchester on the date, I forget the date now, but it was a Saturday, it's actually holiday Saturday. You will proceed to Paddington Station, London. You will move to King's Cross Station together with your kit, and you will take the 7 o'clock train from King's Cross, London to Fort William. Reporting Fort William, 11:12, Sunday morning, the such and such and so and so. Yes, sir. Understood, fight? Yes, sir. Good luck. Keep up the good shooting. Pump, 1, 2, down, 1, 2, out. And I read it again. I was bloody silly. I said, here's British intelligence. I've seen the 19th War Intelligence course. And I know far more about this railway war than British intelligence, because I know damn well there are no trains north from Glasgow after midnight on Saturday night. There are no trains run on a Sunday on the West Highland Line. I cannot report on Sunday at 11:12. The soonest I can report is Monday morning at 11:12. What do I do? I'll take the train at King's Cross. I'll go to Edinburgh. Instead of moving from Edinburgh to the Glasgow platform, I'll have time, just time to buy a ticket to Dundee. And the train from Edinburgh went to Glasgow and picked up the West Highland Line at 5:50 each day except Sundays. And so then I phoned my father and I said, you won't believe this, but I've been posted to Fort William. Not Ontario, but Fort William. To Granite House, which I know is Joe Fitchenge's chip shop. He said, you're joking. I said, no, I'm not joking. It's all here in black and white. But I said, look, Dad, as you well know, I can't report on Sunday because there's no means of getting there. So what I'm supposed to do is I'm not going to go to Glasgow to sit in a transit camp until Monday, early Monday morning. I said, I'm going to take a ticket to Dundee. If you'll meet me tomorrow morning, I think it's after 7 o'clock sometime, Taybridge Station. Yes, well. And I said, I'd like to come home for a bath and breakfast. We'll have a chat for a wee while. And then, I know you'll get petrol from John. Will you run me to Crianlarich? What for? For lunch. And then I said, you run me up to the fork at above Tyne Drum and I'll walk through. What? I said, I'll walk through Zenco. You're daft. Your mother will think you're daft. I said, well, that may be, but as far as I understand it, there's a steady stream of military traffic these days passing through the glen regularly, as far as I understand. So I said, I'm not concerned. But he said, it's 33, I said, no, it's 33 miles of the glen, and it's 22 miles to Fort William, and that's 55 miles, and I said, I've got 10 miles to Spion Bridge, if I can get to Spion Bridge. I said, please, just allow me, Dad, to make these arrangements. Let me come home, run me to Crean Larrick, wave me goodbye at the Tyne Drum Fork, and I'll ring you from wherever I end up that night, but it certainly will not be in Glencoe. Well, I got home, and my mother was upset about this. A wee boy walking for 60 miles was full kit, backpack, side pack, haversack pack, and a muffled kit bag on top through the glen. But we did go. We had lunch in Crean Larrick, and they did stand by at Tyne Drum till I climbed up the hill and round the bend out of sight, and then they went home. And I hadn't gone more than about 200 yards when we pick up truck ground to a halt. Where are you going, soldier? I said, I'm due to report this morning at Fort William. But I said, as you probably know, there are no trains, so I couldn't report this morning, but I'm doing the best I can. I'm catching lifts. Any chance of a lift? Where are you going? I said, I'm going to Fort William. Where are you going? I'm going to Inverness. Oh, I said, look, as a matter of fact, my wife is living with her parents above Spion Bridge. And I said, if I could use your vehicle as far as that, I can walk down there and I can get a bed for the night, and she'll run me to the station on Monday morning, pick up the train, and I'll report in accordance with instructions at the soonest possible moment. Jump in. So that's what happened. I said, when we got up to Kilmeny, I said, you stop here, it's only half a mile. I said, no, you've done enough. You let me go. And rang the bell, and Jesse from North Uist answered, oh! My sales, it's the master himself, and he's in uniform. Come in. And she knew nothing about this, of course. So they were astonished. And in due course, she ran me to the station on Monday morning, where I reported Major Gavin Brown of the Intelligence Corps, old enough just to have been in time to win the victory and war medal, 1914-18. He'd remained in the territorials, and had the TD decoration as well. He was of Scottish extraction, from West Coast, and he was French master at Merchant Taylor's School in Norwood, Middlesex. He'd married a girl who was a Scottish hockey international, don't remember her own name, but she was Nancy, and the twin boys, Patrick and Michael. And they took over the closed Caruanan Hotel along Achan Tor, just outside Fort William, and he installed himself there. Latterly he moved up to Moorer, but that was after my day. Anyhow, he was intensely interested to find that I had a local background, because since 1934 I'd been spending at least 2 weeks every summer, sometimes three, with my wife's folks, wife-to-be's folks, and in the summer they moved from their own home to a shooting lodge, Kilconnet, up near the Grey Corries, actually, to south of Spion Bridge, up in the mountains. And there was a little loch there, which her father and I used to fish. The great attraction of the lodge was a beautiful billiards table, and we spent the time playing billiards. But that's beside the point. Anyhow, I had this local background, and I had become known to local folks, and I got to know local folks. And Gavin Brown had only recently taken up this section in upstairs in Budger Fitzhenry's chip shop, accessible by its own stair. And when he found that I had local knowledge, I was suspended from other duties, became Man Friday. I had certain patrols, which I did, but I was on call all the time. He never again drove the car himself.
Was it only when you arrived there at Fort William that you knew what you were going to be having to do?
I knew nothing about it except as Johnny a field security section. That had been discussed at Matlock, what field security sections did their duties, the whole compass of their duties and all the rest of it, but that was all.
Did Gavin Brown tell you the specifics of the his duties?
Not at first. No, he simply said that you're joining this section and we're responsible for the entire security of the whole of Lough Aber. And do you know the extent of that? I said, yes, it's about 520 square miles. Oh, you know, that's how this happened. So my father-in-law's parish is 443 square miles, and you've got a little bit down to Ballachulish there. So that's the extent. Oh. And then he started asking questions. And when he found that I had this local background, he just decided that I would be his man Friday. He never again drove his car, except for personal business. And I was on call, as I say. Then, at this time, we were responsible also for the security of the STC, Special Training Centre, quartered at Inverilet Castle, which belonged to Francis and Pucci Cameron Head. They were living in another house deeper in the estate. And it was commanded at that time by Lieutenant Colonel Mayfield, who had been in the Norwegian campaign with Gubbins and had come back and was seconded to Inverilet as commandant. He didn't last long. He was out by December. It was a rough and tumble mess, and there were all sorts of scallywag, cauliflower ears and broken noses and teeth missing from time to time amongst the officer mess. I think that was one of the reasons why Mayfield disappeared. But I can't state that, but I think that may be one of the reasons. Also, one of his officers was Shimmy Lovett, the master of Lovett, and of course it was said that Mayfield had been his factor. So it was a reversal of positions. And Shimmy was not awfully popular because he got involved in a fracas one night with some of his troops, or some of the troops rather, and he got a slight knife wound through his kilt and his bum.
What, a fight with his own?
There was a fracas of some kind, and he was involved, and it was quite a serious fight, and he got his kilt pierced and a wee poke on his bum with a knife. Anyhow, that's beside the point. But that was our responsibility, and we had NCOs stationed at Inverilet, and also they took over Achterloon, which was also in their compound. It was near Corpach, a smaller lodge on the north side of the road, just before you entered the village of Corpach. And they also had, these were for the independent companies, forerunners of the commandos. There was number one company in Verilet, number two at Achterloon, and there was a third independent company outside the protected area. These two were inside the protected area and therefore guarded, secluded, secret. But the third company was stationed at Inverlochy Castle, which was just 2.25 miles outside Fort William, to the east and north, off the main road, just entering off the main road. That was owned by the Lord Abinger, built in 1820, I think it was, the castle, by the Scarlett family. He was Colonel Scarlett. And there they had number three independent company, a Polish company, entirely Polish, commanded by Major Mackworth Praed, Praed's bank. He ran a very, very good company indeed. We had trouble at weekends, Friday and Saturday, when the other two companies were intermingled in Fort William. There were all sorts of brawls were out in pubs. But number three company, the Poles were never involved. The Poles kept clear of all that. He was a very good commandant. Anyhow, that was outside the PA, and it couldn't even become a PP, a protected place, because of the fact that the Scarlets lived in an extreme back part of the house. Himself, his wife, Felix. My wife was going to play tennis with Felix for their summer tennis parties. And there was another son, Peter Scarlett. And so it couldn't become a PP. And we had other duties as well. We had to keep tabs on the guard posts at the entrance to the protected areas. They were military units, sort of command units, nothing to do with us. But we were the fount of knowledge for them. Anything strange they reported to us, because we were on the spot in Fort William.
Were there roadblocks entering and leaving the protected
area? There were guards on duty, yes. There were no sort of roadblocks as such. There was an arm that could be swung down, but that was all there was. And there was a permanent 24-hour guard. And one of the most memorable payments for entry was the Lord Brockett, who owned Inverie, of course, the whole of Moidart. And Brockett was an Archie sympathiser and known to be so. So he turned up one night, and Captain Davidson, who was QSB, Choice Borders, rang us up in Granite House that he had the Lord Brockett here demanding entrance, and according to his list...